The Entrepreneurs Advocacy presents Street Smart Sales, a combination of personality recognition techniques and physiognomy, a science of communication techniques based on recognizing traits in one's face. The follow-up.
You know, it's really amazing when we think about the people that we work with and, you know, the normal conversations and when something doesn't go right. Now, I went back 4 or 5 months ago and I started recording every dial that I make, which I stopped doing because I know my numbers. I mean, I know exactly. Now, what really is impressive to me is that my numbers are 1 in 7, 1 in 6. I mean, so somewhere along there. So I made 54 dials for people in Contra Costa County to come to Elite Leads. And out of 54 dials, I talked to 25. That's typical. And I ended up with, out of 25, 16 said they would come to Elite Leads. Out of 16, I know 8 will show up and 4 will join. So when you think about, you know, the challenge of what you're facing in sales, when you know your numbers, right, this is the greatest way for you to control your income. But if you don't keep track of what your challenges are, because when I started the Elite Leads 14 years ago, my number was probably 1 in 50. And I would focus on, what am I not saying? What are people responding to? Where am I getting that level of success? And then I would keep tweaking it. I would keep coming up with things. And instead of just coming out and saying, you know, this is what I do, this is what I can help you with, I'd start asking, where's your biggest challenge? What is it that you face every day? What keeps you from having the kind of business that you think you deserve? And the more I asked that, the more I gained the kind of evidence that people needed to hear back from me. So now, what do you think the number one challenge businesses have? That they believe they have.
Sufficient clients?
They think it's money. So what does money boil down to? Clients, right?
And,
well, if you think about it, back it up. Where do their clients come from? If they're not out there making the marketing calls, they're not out there showing up at events. And I look at every month, I look at this, you know, 5 people came from Rise, and, you know, out of the 100 people that committed to coming to Elite Leads, 50% came from members, right? So I know where I have to invest my time, you know, picking up the phone. Jerry, and I wanted to thank you, you are actually coming to our luncheon tomorrow. Jerry actually referred me 5 people, 3 who joined Elite Leads, and that's why you're going to be at the luncheon tomorrow. The people who constantly, every year, refer me, people who join. You know, I take the time, I honor them at lunch, I try to acknowledge that they really have gone out of their way for me. You know, part of sales is looking at the whole picture, not just you call somebody, you find out if there's a reason to do some business, you sit down and you talk with them, and then you do the business and you walk away. That is actually a salesperson. A sales consultant digs in deeper, right? So what else does that client need? What else can you do to help people figure out, by working with you and all the contacts that you have, what is going to make a difference for them in their business, right? So each one of you has something specifically that's helpful. And if you look at being able to get down to the level, you know, drill down to what each person needs, you will find that your sales statistics get better and better. So if you're looking at 1 in 20 now, which is the average, you dial 20 people, you approach 20 people, you talk to 10, 5 say they're interested, you have a sit-down meeting with 2, and 1 actually works with you. That's the national average. You know that 1 client earns you X number of dollars. Now you know you want to earn how much money a month. I don't care if it's $20,000 a month. You now know how to make that $20,000 a month because it's your number. So every business has a number. The private investigation firm, you remember Carol Gear? Maybe some from there. Carol had a private investigation firm where she would actually help employers research employees, and she said, there's no way we have a number. So I said, okay, let's pull out the yellow pages. That's the worst case scenario, isn't it? Pull out the yellow pages. After 1 week, the number was 1 in 65. 2.5 hours of dials to get one client. And I don't care what category she was in, whether it was manufacturing or automobile salespeople, it came out 1 in 65. And she said, well, we can't keep up with that dialing. And I said, sure you can. You hire out the telemarketing. And even if it was half as much, if you had a 1 in 130, who cares? Because the average client was $5,000 to them.
Mm-hmm.
So with 130 dials, you're paying someone $10 an hour to make the dials be worth $5,000? Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
So that's how you look at developing the business. You know, when I talk about outsourcing the things in your company that are challenging for you, you know, quit doing things that take up all your time. Hi, Millie. Rain, huh? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good.
I'm sorry I'm so late.
You're
we were telling jokes about you while we were here. Now that's cool.
Well, you must have had a good time.
So this is just, you know, I really want you to pay attention to the numbers. This is absolutely the only way to be able to figure out, thank you, dear, figure out how you can control how much money you make, how hard it is for you to be able to get clients, and to minimize the amount of time you're spending on stuff that is $10 an hour garbage stuff that somebody else should be doing. So outsourcing, you know, getting rid of things on your table that you don't need to be doing. You know, you shouldn't be doing your bookkeeping. You shouldn't be doing a lot of paperwork that you do. Have someone else do it. And there are lots of people out there that would really appreciate a $10 an hour job. So, you know, spend that time in doing more marketing. You know, we'll go back to this. 35% of your time has to be in marketing your business. That's some form of sales, whether you're at a leads meeting, you're taking a class, whether you're showing up at a chamber event, or you're speaking. 35% until you have your business evened out consistently every month for 6 months, you have more than enough business. So then when someone comes to you and they're not exactly the kind of person you want to work with, and if you haven't found them yet, you will. And there's a lot of them out there. I fired someone from Elite Leads last month because I got a couple of calls from people and they said, this is what went on. And I said, you know, this is a no money back business, but I'm going to give you your money back. You're not Elite Leads material. And they got really angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm sorry, do not contact anyone else from Elite Leads. It's a tight-knit group, they'll tell me. And so do not try to talk to anybody else in Elite Leads. So, you know, it is really a great position to be in when you know you have more than enough business and you don't have to do business with people who are unethical, people who give you a lot of time, they don't respect you. You know, take the time to set it up now so that 6 months from now, you don't have to worry about where the business is coming from. I don't care what your business is, when you do this by the numbers, your business will do better than you could possibly imagine. You know, I look at Jerry Hart, and I tell you, there is no business that I thought would be more difficult than trying to sell people on email marketing. It's an intangible. How could you possibly justify $5,000 to do an email marketing campaign? I mean, could any of you write a check for $5,000 and say, okay, do an email campaign for me?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't.
What would be the yield on it?
Well, but that was an unknown.
Three years ago, it was a totally unknown. The yield is usually the number of buys.
It's different for every business. So Jerry took a hearing aid store. Now, this is what blew me away. An audio email for a hearing aid store for people who are deaf. Doubled the store's business in 1 year.
What, really? Must be the relative.
Yeah. But they're not that.
Now, wait a minute. Now, people who need hearing aids are how old?
Depends.
But an average over 50, right? So I would say the medium range is 65. Right? Typical Rossmore kind of client. Do you think they have email? Do you think they have speakers on their computers? Or they even have computers? I would not have thought. But it is amazing. And then he took the Buckhorn Grill. And he actually tripled their traffic in 6 months.
That I could believe, because there's a lot of people out there.
Well, it's kind of out of the way, too.
It's, yeah. But it's, you know, Buckhorn Grill is not too out of the way, and it's pretty well known, and they do, you know, television spots, and they do, you know, newspapers and all kinds of things, and coupons, and but Jerry's work specifically tripled their traffic, because they knew where the business came from. He took a store that's a low-carb store in Lafayette, and he just bare-boned the process because they didn't have a budget. And in 1 year, they had 4 stores based on how much they increased their business. Mm-hmm. So Jerry created a campaign where they would send out an email to people who came in the store. Bring a friend, get a gift. The gifts were $75. And they put $75 worth of low-carb food in a bag. And as long as you responded to the email, you walk in the store, you get $75 worth of low-carb stuff. Mm-hmm. And in 1 year, they had 4 stores based on the increased revenue that they generated from those campaigns on a monthly basis.
What was the average sale in that store?
Well, when they started out compared
to... Customer walks out of the door, what did they usually spend?
I don't know what that number is, but I do know that the Lafayette store... was tenfold what they were before working with Jerry, and that allowed them to keep expanding. So every 4 months they opened a new store. So now they have 4 stores generating just as much.
In that business, I would think the repeat would be what's important more than the size of the.
Right. Yeah, it's the people keep coming back. You know, and it's a perfect time for low carb stuff. You know, Jerry took his business and he really used the personality recognition. And I remember that when he got the Buckhorn Grill, he walked in the store knowing that the manager of that store was a driver.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a 5-minute presentation. He walked in and he said, this is what we do. These are the numbers. This is what we expect. 7 minutes later, he walks out with a $10,000 check. He said he had never closed business that rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... Think about, you know, the process of sales, and yes, knowing your product and service and knowing your competition is really important, but that is not why people buy. The number one reason that people buy is based on your personality. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get people to be comfortable enough to hear what you're saying, you're better than 50% there. Because most salespeople sell a product, a service, and they don't get in to know the person that they're selling to. So the more you get to know your prospects, the easier it is for you to close business. So think about the last time you bought something, and I've told you this before, but if I go to buy something and I think that I'm going to have repeated conversations with these people, if they talk to me as though I'm an analytical, explaining every little detail, going over all the reasons why, I won't buy from them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of competition out there. I don't have the bandwidth. My ears ache, literally ache. I can't deal with it. It's like, get to the point. Bottom line it for me. You know, if you recognize what somebody needs to know, so if you're talking to an analytical and you bottom line it for them, you'll never sell to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to practice this. Practice with your friends and your family and you know, people you meet. You know, just immediately go into the mode of what personality are they? You know, carry the card with you. Before you go into an event, go over the details of what the card personality traits, what each person does, you'll begin to recognize that even personalities sit and stand and walk into a room differently.
Yeah.
Each personality.
You wouldn't have to have like a list of what those are by any chance. What the specific...
Sit, stand, and stuff?
Yeah.
In my head, I do. I've never committed it, but I can.
Could you?
Sure.
Because that would help a lot.
Sure. Have you ever seen somebody walk into a room and they kind of shuffle their feet? You know, they don't really pick up their feet. It's not their, like on purpose with their feet. You know, they just kind of like into the room and they just kind of... Number one, that person does not feel as though they're successful. They don't own what they're doing in their life. They're not comfortable with what's in their life. But the main thing is about that kind of personality, they're amiable and they're waiting to catch the temperature of the room. And then that's the way they're going to drift.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. So as soon as somebody comes in the room and, like, you know, they walk in and every step is purposeful, what personality are they?
Driver.
You betcha. All right, they know where they're going. They know how they're going to get there. Nothing's going to get in their way. So the expressives will walk into the room with kind of a flamboyant, you know, you can almost see their body language where, you know, they're kind of going this way and they go this way and they're trying to get attention. And, you know, it's not like they're swishing around the room, but they're not direct line people. They kind of move around.
Remember the movie, The Scarlet O'Hara?
Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking of The Godfather. The Godfather Street, we just saw it the other day. I watched this guy come in and...
Yeah, expressives are really fun to watch. Now, when you look at, now, Louise keeps adapting to the environment, which basically Louise has been in sales 14 years around there, and was a school teacher before. So, as a school teacher, Louise was really an amiable personality, but had a lot of the analytical background and would have done really well teaching something like science or math. But you didn't teach science or math.
Oh, I got placed in Germany, Shaw, all kinds of interesting places.
So,
substitute teaching.
So what happens is that people adapt to their environment, right? Now, so Louise is a chameleon, which is what I learned to do. So the more you match other people's body language, the more comfortable they are. So when you see someone lean forward, you lean forward. If they're leaning way back, you start back, and then you move in, and then they start to move
right.
People can't help it. They will match you. And the more you get them to move into the table, the more receptive they are to listening to what you're saying. That's the whole point. So you have to get people to be open to you. Because no matter what you say, if you're not saying it in such a way they can absorb it, you might as well keep your mouth shut and not say anything. Right? And every person is different. Now, the analytical person is the person who generally will hesitate coming into a room. And especially if there's a number...
Until they see the snack table. Then they just go straight to it.
Well, that's a great way to avoid...
If they're a guy, right?
That's
exactly.
A great way to avoid people is go right to where the food is.
Right.
You know, and then they look down, and if someone talks to them, they'll answer, but they're not really great about mixing or, you know, looking up and being social. Right? So, that when my first mixer in 1991... I actually wouldn't go until somebody said, I'm going to pick you up and take you there. And so they took me to the Walnut Creek Chamber, and I was terrified. I mean, I literally did not want to be there. And I remember feeling nauseous because I was so afraid of walking into that room. There were 200 people in that room. It was at Mechanics Bank, Walnut Creek, downtown, and I didn't want to be there. And Dave walked me through. He actually literally had to grab my arm and kind of guide me through because I was stuck. I kept getting stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would introduce me to someone and he'd kind of walk away, and I would freeze. I would literally not know what to do next. If someone turned away, and I'm standing there like, now what? And people would not walk up to me and just stop talking to me. I mean, I had to make that approach. So it was really difficult, and I understand when you look at people that are analytical, they don't like to be around social environments. So if you can help them get comfortable, you're going to win them over. You're going to make it a lot easier for them. So they hesitate going to a room. They will beeline for the food, kind of around people. They won't like walk right through the middle of the crowd to get to the food. They'll kind of go around the wall to get there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, look at, and they won't like walk up and just look in the eye. You know, they'll wait until someone talks to them. They will never walk up and touch you. Animal people will not touch people they don't know. Mm. And do not touch them.
We've been slapped so many times with blood.
That's another social skill, all right? So just knowing that little bit, you can walk into any room and know who you need to talk with and how you need to talk with them. Right? There are 340 clues in everyone's face on how you can immediately recognize how to talk with someone. Physiognomy was actually developed in the 14th century, but made well known in like the 1950s, that a judge kept track of every criminal that came into court, who was guilty, who wasn't, what level of guilt they had, what kind of crime they had, depending on their face. And he would make a bomb when he first met the criminal, and he'd say, this person is guilty. And he was right, 100% of the time. I'll tell you something that's helped me a great deal, is I don't care what it is, I end up, it's a research. I look at everything that I can find to help me learn how to communicate with people. So whether it's astrology, enneagrams, numerology, I don't care what it is, physiognomy, I will go in and look at these different processes because it helps me understand why people do the things that they do. And we have our own way of doing things, and it doesn't mean that everybody else is wrong. And very rarely will you find anyone who matches what you do. So we can't be in judgment of other people, but how do we learn how to communicate and break down those barriers? Just learn behaviors. So you're here today, and we're talking about follow-up. In 1986, I was laid off by my boss, terminated. No, he said terminated. He says, I'm sorry to let you know you've been terminated. And I said, you know, I don't think anyone has the right to terminate.
Except Arnold.
Oh, he was a fat little mom in 86. And if anyone had tried to tell me that, you know, here it is 20 years later, and I feel my life is just darn near perfect, I never would have believed that. Ever. So everything that happens in our lives is always perfect. It just sometimes it takes a while. That makes sense. Right. Everything is perfect. A lot of times it takes us a long time to figure out where the perfection is. Sometimes we never know, but that's not important. Jared and I were talking before the meeting, and it's always being in that state of openness. Whatever's happening is happening for a reason, and you don't get involved in the emotion of it, or, you know, sometimes life has to get really tough to make us change what we're doing. And if we don't change, we miss a really valid point in our lives. So it's that whole thing of just sit back and watch the show. So it hasn't been a terrible year.
No, I've got a lot of value out of it, but certainly not of sales content.
Well, but that's perfect too. Because what
if I draw the right conclusion.
If you had done mediocre, you would have stuck with it, and you would have pushed yourself to do something that maybe isn't right for you. And by seeing that it wasn't right for you, you were able to stop and move on to something new.
And I got an excellent education out of it, too.
You bet. So there's never any wrong in life.
No, it's a nice career for
But you know what? you survived the year and you survived it well, so not to worry.
Now the key is you're all right.
Exactly.
Something I'll ask you over there.
And I just went home.
Well, except that maybe you don't know, and maybe I should know.
But I can assure you how to do that.
Oh, it's okay.
You know, I was one of those people that went kicking and screaming into sales. I did not want to be in sales. I thought all salespeople were untrustworthy, and I thought that everybody in sales was untrustworthy. And I would go to these big trade shows with this Fortune company that I worked with, and in a Fortune 500 company, and I had to go all over the country, and I would tell people, well, this does this, and this does that, and this is what you want to do, so you want this. And the regional manager came over, and he said, you're selling. I said, I am not. There's no way I'm selling. And he says, but that's exactly what sales is. It's the ability to explain what you have to offer in a way that people can make a valid choice. And he kept after me for over a year to go into sales, and I just could not make myself do it until one day I woke up in Denver. I had no idea where I was. I've been traveling for 2 years. I was home 3 weeks out of 2 years. I had no clue where I was supposed to go or why. And it's a travel sickness, really. It's an illness. And I called my boss. I couldn't even, for the life of me, think about picking up a matchbook and seeing that I was in the Denver Marriott. It was beyond my comprehension.
I hope you got on vacation at that point.
Yeah.
The boss should have said, you need to take some time off.
No, he didn't. He didn't at all. And I said, I quit. That was my solution. I called him up and I said, I quit. And he says, well, you have to at least complete the installations this week. And I said, I don't even know where I'm going. He says, you're going to Colorado Springs. And I said, well, you better call and tell him I'm late because I'm not going to get there in time. Hour and a half south of Denver, right? So I get in the car and I'm driving. I'm thinking, this just doesn't look right. I've gone north instead of south.
Yeah.
And, you know, by this time, and I wasn't aware of, you know, be at peace with what's going on. I was really stressed over this. And I have literally traveled 1,000 miles a week and flew in and out of 5 states every single week for 2 years. And I finally got down to Colorado Springs, and I was just incoherent. I was a babbling idiot. And I couldn't make sense of the installation. I was fried. And I came back on Friday night. I insisted that my boss met me on Saturday, and I said, I'm not going back. I quit. I cannot do this anymore, not one more day. And he talked me into meeting the regional sales manager, who talked me into going into sales. And for the life of me, I can't imagine why I agreed to do that at the time. The first sales call I had was at Beckman Instruments. And I was sitting in the parking lot, and all of a sudden it dawned on me that I was in sales. Because they pushed me through this big sales training thing, you know, really fast, and don't give her a moment's peace so that I would catch up with it. And I'm sitting in the parking lot, and the guy's named Jim Rollins, and all of a sudden I started crying, and I'm thinking, what am I doing here? And I got out of the car and I walked in this door. It just said Beckman Instruments on this door. And I walked up the flight of steps and I walked down a hallway and down a cubicle aisle and down another aisle. And I'm standing in front of this desk and I said, Jim, I'm here. I have your proposal. And he looked up and he said, how in the world did you get here? I had no idea. I said, I just came in the back door and I just wandered around and I found you. But it was not like I took a right, took a left. I mean, I was just very purposefully going to this cubicle. I'd never been there before. He said, you were supposed to come the other side of the building, and the receptionist would have walked you in. And I said, well, I'm here now. And I said, here's the proposal. And I had done the first cost justification proposal this company had ever seen. So I could take, you're doing it this way, by using this piece of the equipment, it will take you 20% less time. So I cost justified dollar-wise, every single thing. He walked me down to purchasing and had them fill out the PO right then and there. Mm-hmm. And he said, if all salespeople could be this exacting, we would not have the challenges we had in the past. Now, I was up against a dresser by Multigraph, who, you know, very well known, probably the biggest on the block at the time. iTech and Mergenthaler, who were really the big boys. Mergenthaler being from Germany, and they had a great reputation of quality. And I was the most expensive. So I was about 8,000 more than anybody else. And yet they filled out the purchase order there on the spot. Now, that didn't really do it for me. I mean, I thought, okay, that's just a fluke. It was the next call that I went on at Varian, and I walked in, and this lady, Kathy, can't remember her last name, and she said, you know, for the first time, she says, all of these companies have men for salespeople, and I feel like I have to be so defensive because they know more than I do. And she said, I've never had anybody just sit down and tell me how I need to make this decision. I got a purchase order right then and there, and they've been stalling for 6 months with the salesperson that I replaced. But the really great one was at Hewlett Packard, and if you've ever known anybody that had to sell at Hewlett Packard, they're tough. They are really, really tough. I had this wild inspiration. I don't even know what got me to do this, but I went by a butcher shop and I bought a roll. We didn't have things like Expedex where you could buy these rolls of butcher paper back then. But I bought this big roll of white butcher paper, and I had this one conversation, and I had been listening to the way people talk. So I knew this guy was an analytical because that's where I came from. And I knew I could identify with what he was going through and trying to keep the department happy and the managers happy. And he was having a tough time as a manager being an analytical. He did not like his position at all. So I came in and I put the butcher paper on the table. I said, we need to meet in the cafeteria. We can't meet in your office because his office was just stacked high with stuff. So we go down to the cafeteria, and I put the butcher paper, and I rolled it out across the table, and I said, I want you to sit here, and I want you to draw out everything that you think a system should do for you. And he started drawing things that would make his life easier. And the one thing that he did that I thought was so funny is he drew a coffee pot as part of the three-sitting equipment. Well, I got to tell you, you know, I looked at him and I said, why the coffee pot? And he said, because our department is so far away from the cafeteria that by the time we come down and get a coffee, cup of coffee, we have to rush back. We only have 15 minutes. And they, by the time they got there, their 15 minutes was up. Now, have you ever been to HP campus? I mean, it was huge. I don't think it's still that big anymore, but it was huge at the time. So I said, so if I can answer each one of these challenges that you're dealing with, can we make this happen? And 30 seconds. And he said, if you can answer every one, yes. So I said, okay, the only thing I can't do is have a built-in coffee time, but everything else I can deal with. So when the equipment showed up 3 months later, I brought him a double burner Mr. Coffee. That was the year they first and that guy loved me so much that I ended up putting six other systems into HP. So it's the listening to what's important to people. That coffee pot made my quota for the quarter. Absolutely made my quota. So if I had just laughed it off, because there's no way you're going to put a coffee pot in a $50,000 Tyson system, right? It's getting creative. And I literally did not know I was creative at the time. I don't think of that. I think I was more into solving the challenge rather than being creative. Anything that you can do to make people more comfortable with working with you or make them more comfortable in the job that they have to do. And I have to tell you, you're all very fortunate because most people have no idea they can do anything other than sit behind that desk at that job that they're not crazy about, that they only get by financially, and life is a struggle and they don't know their way out. They don't even think there's a way out. You know, that came back to me big time on this cruise, you know, meeting people who you have to figure out being, you know, $2,500 to $4,500 for a cabin for a 7-day cruise. These people have money, right? It's not like they're poor, but they're stuck. They're in a life that they don't like. I mean, I met people from all over the world who are stuck. And that was a field day for me. I had such a good time.
What, if it's not digressing, what topics? Did you speak on different topics with them?
Yeah, every day was different. Mixing it up, speak easy, your right to write, and create your own reality. So, and that was the one I had the biggest response to. People were just really excited about the idea of doing something different than they were doing other than the lady from India.
Of course.
All she wanted in her life was just to have her house by the beach and have somebody cook and clean and bring her food.
We're just in the mountains, I'd agree with her kids.
Now, you know, I told her
in the ocean.
I told her that after she'd been retired 3 years, a professor for 32 years, I said, 2 more years and you're going to go start breaking crazy. You're going to have to find that. You're too intelligent to sit there and do nothing.
Oh, I didn't understand doing that as part of it.
Do nothing. Yeah, do nothing. That's not going. So, you know, and I think about where we live in the Bay Area and how fortunate we are that we have as much business happening. And yes, there's a lot of things like, you know, 45 minutes from Concord for someone to get here this morning because of the rain and, you know, the traffic we deal with all the time. And, you know, we're surrounded by some pretty heavy-duty crime areas. But overall, we're a lot luckier than almost anybody in the world. You know, I met people and it just shocks me sometimes because we're not paying attention to what's going on out there in the world until we actually start having conversations with people who are closely associated with people who don't get by. You know, who have to see every day what's going on that we don't have access to. So, you know, when you walk in, the difference is in attitude. So one of my new clients, Paul, came here India through Japan, Taiwan. He had a radio program and a television program and said one day, well, this is the top of the heap, packed it up and moved here. Wasn't willing to settle for success there. He moved here. Well, he actually moved to Canada, couldn't get a job, and had a brother-in-law here in the Bay Area and got a job as an engineer.
Of course.
99% of all Indians are engineers.
They're no dummies.
They're very smart. And somebody talked him into buying a house out in Antigua for $300,000 3 years ago. Today that house is worth $600,000. He just sold the house. He has a house in Fremont, and he has a rental in Fremont, a duplex. He's further along in 3 years of being in this country than most people I know that have been here their entire life. What's the difference? Attitude. It's all attitude. When you walk into someone and you desperately need business, they know it. And 99% of the time, they will not do business with you. If you walk in, win or lose, I'm only doing this if it works for both of us. You have a 50-50 chance of closing them. It is attitude. And I can't stress that enough. When you're comfortable in your own skin, people will be more comfortable with you. If you're not happy with what you're doing, it's for a darn good reason. Start looking at changing things, one thing at a time. We have someone in the lately, and she said, oh my God, she said, I just heard that you never change your relationship, your job, and your home. And she's doing all three. And I said, but you're doing it consciously. You know that your job's not working, your relationship isn't right for you, and you have to give up the house to get out of the relationship. So consciously, I'm not saying that everybody should change everything that they're doing, but little things, right? If you're not happy with the way your client base is going, look at new ways of doing it. You know, find people who are really happy with what they're doing. Give them a mentor. Brainstorm.